If you're gonna take January for your right ball?
Yeah, for my no, the other way around.
Oh, the left ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then February for your right, you said?
Yeah, you got to save the best for last.
That's true. February's the last month of the year. I was actually thinking that each of us shave one ball and leave the other one unshorn.
Okay, I'll shave your left one.
No. I've been down this road before.
Rebellious love is begging door to door, but finds the silence.
Live from the 2012 Laugh Olympics in Bedrock, Alberta, it's the Side Quest, episode 413. Welcome, everybody. I'm your loving host, Dally Domofsky, also joining me and not yelling quite as loud, your other loving host, Mike Bachman.
Give it a minute.
And today's featured artist, Ryan the Dark Wayne Franklin.
I don't know anything about art.
Well, there you go. That's what an artist would say.
Well, that's deep.
You just outed yourself. welcome, gentlemen. Steve can't be here, Steven Strom, but he has sent us a message. So here's Steven's message.
Uh-oh.
Because he's not going to be able to make it today. He is working at the old grocery mart. Here it is. I'm going to do my best Steven impersonation, okay? If you're reading this, I'm a...
Excuse me.
I'm afraid it may already be too late. While I knew at that time that it was probably a bad idea to take a loan from those Yakuza loan sharks, I just couldn't find any other way to pay for that lifetime subscription and MMO. What? For that lifetime subscription and MMO that you've never heard of and probably don't care about. But worry not, friends and fellow podcast hosts, and Ryan, even inside of this Turkish... First of all, I can't write. This Turkish prison, while avoiding the rape gangs and shanking other inmates with this 3DS stylus, I still managed to find the time to play more games than any of you goons put together. And so, these are my final words. The following list is to be read as slam poetry during the last podcast I never recorded. Final Fantasy 13, Aliens Infestation, Gravity Rush, Floating Cloud God Saves the Pilgrims, Velocity.
That's not real.
Yeah, there's no way that's a real game.
He made that up.
Where is my heart? Dyad, Rainbow Moon, Lumines, Electronic Sim,
He said read it as slam poetry, not as a robot that doesn't know how to love.
Isn't that what Steven really is, a robot that doesn't know how to love?
And pretty much.
I'm an android. Final Fantasy 13 is not as bad as everyone told me it was. That being said, it's still pretty fucking bad. But I bought the sequel because it supposedly has time travel, so I guess I'll sit through another 40 hours of children talking about Hope and Destiny and all that JRPG bullshit.
Oh, what a selling point, time travel.
How is he not on the show and yet still on the show at the same time? I don't understand why this is happening.
Aliens Infestation. Why didn't anyone tell me that this game was fucking Metroid? Also, how come no one can make a modern Metroid-style game that's longer than 3 hours? Anyway, this game actually makes Xenomorph scary for the first time since Alien 3. Yes, I liked Alien 3, you fucking assholes. So between that and the gameplay, I definitely say it's worth the $4.99 I paid for it. Velocity. Why? I sound like the Joker. Do you want to find out how I got this smile?
You sound like a sad, like nerdy Joker.
You sound like the guy dressed up as the Joker at the midnight premiere.
You want to know how I got this butterfly collection?
Well, first you take your HDMI cable and you put it up Commissioner Gordon's ass. Velocity. Why aren't you playing this game yet, Dally? It works on Vita now and everything. Okay. Floating Cloud God Saves the Pilgrims. It's a fairly pretty side-scrolling PlayStation mini shooter. Yeah. Where is my heart? A third, that's right. Third mother crumpers, PlayStation Mini that works on Vita. It's a really weird pixelated platformer that alters the physical dimensions of space by cutting the screen into frames and rearranging them. This one's for you too, Nally. Ooh-war-ar-ru-arg. That, my friends, was the pre-recorded Stephen Straw message.
It's pre-recorded, and we rehearsed our parts so well that we were able to actually talk to it.
Yeah, it was amazing. That was recorded earlier today, and we were just playing it now. Anyways, that was Stephen Strum. Sorry you couldn't be with us, Stephen. But we do have two better individuals on the show besides me. So, gentlemen, what have you been up to? Oh, we are going to be, for those people that want to know, we are going to be featuring indie bands as our music of the day. So we don't have one today because we just started this new format-ish podcast. So, but that if you're an indie band or musician or know of a musician that would want to have their music showcased, feel free to let us know. God, I can't get that stupid voice on. If you have an indie band and you want to...
The voice you made up?
No, it's Stephen Strum. I'm sorry, Stephen Strum. Yes, I know Jay Fonick just released a new track today, so I'm going to be Jordan Mallory, former side questing writer, now for working for Joystick. he'll probably be on this bad boy. So let's find out a little bit about what we've been up to, shall we, gentlemen?
Sure.
All right. Beautiful. Well, I'll go ahead and start. I was in Toronto this past weekend for a wonderful wedding on my wife's side of the family. And I was deathly ill the entire time, so I was popping Zicam, which doesn't work. I'm sorry, people who kept telling me on Twitter to use Zicam, but fuck you. But
that's holistic medicine bullshit. Yeah,
no, exactly. Zinc, whatever. Zinc goes on your nose, so you look like a bat.
Eating metal doesn't make you better.
Yeah, exactly. When you're going to tell me to eat iron next, I've eaten lead chips.
That's how Iron Man got started.
By eating... Iron Am.
Yeah. I might need to brush up on my superhero origin stories.
No, I think you're pretty close. That's why Spider-Man became Spider-Man by eating Spider-Anium. And Ant-Man ate anal and became...
Oh, what?
What?
all right. This is going places.
So anyways, real interestingly, I wanted to hop on and do some writing because we were just kind of hanging around at the house the night before the wedding. And I asked my wife's cousin, hey, can I – what's your Wi-Fi? I'm not seeing it on the iPad Wi-Fi area here. Oh, yeah, we don't have Wi-Fi. Wait, you don't have Wi-Fi? Yeah, there's – yeah, there. This it's it warps your kids' minds.
What?
Apparently, from
you're how they related to these it, people.
Apparently, from how this is Canada. All right, I was in Toronto. Apparently,
well, those are barely people. Wi-Fi, then, I guess.
Yeah, it's true. They're more like polar bears, polar bear Eskimo hybrids. The public school systems are pulling Wi-Fi out of their classrooms because they think that it's messing with the kids' health. Because like a couple of kids. Reported being dizzy in class one day, which, come on, guys, that's just kids not wanting to go to class that day. I'm dizzy. I blame the Wi-Fi. So they're yanking Wi-Fi out, which means there's a Wi-Fi apocalypse happening in Canada. So pretty interesting.
That's dumb.
Yeah. So I could not get in there at all. So.
Actually, when I was younger, Wi-Fi would have warped my mind, but I didn't have the password. So
that was a bad joke.
Yeah, it was.
No, it was pretty good though, right? Because like that implies that in order for your mind to be warped, your mind needs the password to the to.
Yeah, I got it.
Well, I mean, no, see, I don't think you did. So maybe I'm going to explain it again.
I think the password was admin1. Oh, you know what, Mike? You're trying to go to 192.001.181.06 instead of 01.
Well, it's the subnet mask was the problem.
Shoot. What was your DNS gateway doing at the time?
It was rerouting to my home.
Yeah. Ryan, what have you been doing? What have you been up to, buddy? Since you're brand new to the podcast, let's find out a little bit about yourself. What's our healthy Ryan doing?
I'm Ryan. I enjoy long walks on the beach, moonlight kissing, I've never done either of those things.
Don't we all? I do them together.
Lately, I've been playing lots of video games, and in expecting of deadly surgery, I have possibly deadly surgery. I've been maintaining my glorious action figure collection.
Deadly surgery. Can you please explain what this is? And also, just to let everybody else know, come Thursday, we're going to have a brand new spot available on SideQuesting staff. We won't have to pay one person. Ryan, what surgery you got going on?
I am having a septoplasty and a bilateral turbinoplasty, which means they're going to fix the bone in the middle of my nose and cut out two things on the inside of my nose, all because I got hit in the face with a Frisbee last year and I can't breathe through my nose.
What? A Frisbee?
It was thrown by a semi-professional Frisbee player.
Was the Wii Sports Resort Frisbee involved?
No.
All right.
Nope.
I should actually mention that that Ryan's appearance on this podcast was made possible by the Make-A-Wish Foundation. They heard of Ryan's plight, and they were able to free up a spot for him. So thank you.
Yeah, I request to be on this show.
They had to kill Steven, though.
The actual wish. The Wish Foundation killed Steven off for you.
I hope you get better, but no. Looking forward to reading your nasally tweets in a couple days here when you can actually start to breathe again. How long does the surgery take, you know?
No, I'm asleep when it happens, so I don't really keep track.
So they're going to put you... I thought you'd be awake going, I can do this, doc. I can do this. Cut me. You're gonna fall asleep in the morning at like 8 a.m. and wake up in March.
Yep.
After the apocalypse.
The last man on Earth. And you're gonna wake up, you're gonna look around and be like, fuck yeah. Now I can find out what really happened to BioShock Infinite.
But your nose is gonna look gorgeous.
Exactly. Everything else will be fucked up. But your nose is gonna be pretty rocking. What action figures have you been taking a look at?
The hardest ones to maintain are the Marvel Universe 3.75 scale figures. Mm-hmm. I have about probably 50, 60 of them all lined up on the TV stand beneath my TV. Mm-hmm. They're not just standing there in their cases. That's boring. I take them out and play with them because I'm a grown man.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I like to set them up and try to recreate iconic moments from the comics.
And then do you wear like put a glove on sometimes and just like smack them all around and yell, I am Thanos and this is my Infinity Gauntlet?
No.
Okay. Nobody knows that joke, apparently. Awesome. Do you have like any rare figures or anything, or are they all pretty
common? These are just ones I usually just get them at Target.
Oh, cool.
My rarest figures are probably, I have the Hot Toys collaboration with Sideshow Collectibles Batman action figures that are like $300 and imported from Hong Kong. So those are the ones I show all the ladies.
pretty cool. I myself am a collector of Skylanders figures. As I've noted several times on the podcast in the past, so I know your addiction. They're worth much more to leave them in the case, but I've been taking them out and lining them up. I actually have them like a moron. I have them lined up on my windowsill, so shit has like dripped on it, and I think birds have probably pooped in it.
Oh, and they probably faded too.
Yeah, they faded.
I think the poop would probably decrease the value.
You know what?
That's your expert opinion.
Yeah. Yep. I have appraised them.
You fucking purists. Mike, what have you been up to, bud?
Well, I've actually been pooping on all my toys, so
you've been.
So I'm really sad to find out that actually lowers the value. But aside from that, I've been reading a lot of Batman comics.
Oh, yeah?
I played through Arkham City and I loved it, and then I saw The Dark Knight Rises, and that just set off this chain reaction. And so I've been just reading like major storylines from the Batman universe. I read the Night Saga. Mm-hmm. I read Death in the Family. I'm in the process of reading Year One, and then I'm going to go through and read, you know, Year Two and Three and whatever.
Have you picked up Killing Joke?
Yeah. Cool. It's been pretty ridiculous.
Good man. The Batman graphic novels are some of the best out of any comics, really. I mean, they rival, as standalone collections, standalone story collections, they rival anything out there from like Watchmen to, you know, some of the Marvel Ultimate stuff even. I mean, they're really great one-off, you know, reading.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that I've actually always I've never liked DC Comics at all. And that's just because they always seemed a little bit like too cheesy for me. I like my superheroes to be based in some sort of pseudoscience.
Sure. Yeah.
Rather than like magic or being from an alien world or something like that. And so that's why I've always kind of gravitated towards Marvel Comics. But Batman, I really like Batman.
Aliens or gods there.
No, there are some, but I mean, you got to agree, at least like the core heroes mostly have some sort of pseudoscientific reason for existing. It's usually some like radioactive accident or something like that. Whereas like, you know, it's mostly like in DC, there's a lot of like,
that's true.
I don't even know how to describe it, but that's kind of why I like Batman. I like Batman in a bubble, but whenever like one of the storylines I'm reading crosses over with like I read Final Crisis, and it was all I could do to get through that, because I was just like, this is ridiculous. Because Batman, like he's you know, catching criminals and everything, and then a Final Crisis happens and he gets transported to another dimension, kills a god, and then gets killed and transported through time. And after that's all done, everything's back to normal. He's catching criminals again in Gotham City. And it's like, how do you come back from that? So I just choose to like ignore that those moments happen. But Yep.
What was the DC series that had like the superhero murders? There was like a whole graphic novel revolved around like domestic violence or something, and they all had to deal with like the fallout of a couple, you know, kind of secondary characters getting offed, but in really weird, deep.
When the ripoff of Mr. Fantastic, I can't think of his name.
Yeah, that's
not, what it was. Not Plastic Man, but another dumb, stretchy guy. His wife got like raped and killed, and then she turned into a ghost, and like that ruined like the whole DC universe. Like all the characters were sad about it.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yep. I can't remember what that was. I can't remember what that one was, but that was a really good. I remember just reading a lot about that. So, So that's pretty cool. I also have been reading a lot of graphic novels lately. I've just been kind of all over the place, catching up on some of my old ones that I've had sitting on the wall, and grabbing new ones as I go along. So, very cool.
Whatever you do, Mike, do not read The Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Now I have to.
No!
I have to. What is it? What's wrong with it?
Well, did you read The Dark Knight Returns yet?
I'm actually in the middle of that right now, as we speak.
It's good. It's good, right?
When I say in the middle of it, I mean like maybe six pages in. So yes, what I've seen so far. Maybe.
What about Batman Year One?
I saw Year One. I have not read the comics yet. That's the next thing on my list.
Okay. Because those two are from when Frank Miller was a genius. The Dark Knight Strikes Again is when he lost his mind. Like, all the stuff you see, that one famous picture where it's just Batman, he says, I'm a goddamn Batman, and everybody makes fun of it. That was from Frank Miller, and he's like, what? Was everybody making fun of that? He's Batman. Like, he thought it was great.
I think I've seen that image. I don't know what it's from, but yeah, I mean, now
it's
I do.
It's from All-Star Batman and Robin, which is like takes place in the same universe as The Dark Knight Returns, which is separate from the main DC universe. And basically, Batman is just like a total dickhole in that universe.
Hmm.
Like, he says, I'm the goddamn Batman.
That sounds pretty sweet, though. Like, I don't...
You think so, but it's just like, oh, this is awful. It's awful. Like, to make Rob, he basically like abuses Robin and makes him hate him, to not like actual abuse.
He did that to some other Robins before too.
No, I mean the way he does it is just like shitty.
Because where's the one where, like, the image that everybody always uses of Batman slapping Robin across the face?
My parents are dead! I think that's a Silver Age story.
Yeah,
I think Rob is actually mind-controlled. I don't know.
I know your meme. It is My Parents Are Dead, Batman Slapping Robin. Is an exploitable comic book panel of the superhero Batman slapping his protege Robin with a speech bubble for each character. This is the origin is it appeared in World's Finest number 153, which was released in 1965. Story is based on an alternate reality in which Batman believes that Superboy, and then Superman, is responsible for the death of his father. And this is what Batman is telling Robin as he's slapping him. Don't tell me I'm wrong, you brat. Proving Superman's guilt is my whole mission in life. And Robin replies back with, ow, Batman, your grief has obsessed you with this idea of vengeance. I beg you, give it up.
And I like it better when he says, my parents are dead.
With that voice, too.
My parents are dead.
Well, because you can actually get the blank template. And the blank template, the one that became really popular was, hey, Batman, what are your parents getting you for Chris? My parents are dead. good times.
But yeah, anyway, The Dark Knight Strikes Again. It's terrible.
All right, I'll have to read it.
It's like Frank Miller ate Final Crisis and then pooped it out.
Well, speaking of things that are not poop, we're going to come right back after this little musical interlude that I have selected.
Segways about poop.
Segways about poop.
Can I just sing the musical interlude?
You can sing the musical interlude.
Be like, boop, doot, 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 boop, doot, 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 boop, doot, 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 boop. And we're back.
And we're back. Time to talk a little bit about some news that's been breaking over the last few days. Very first news bit. Oh yeah, NABS, Final Fantasy III as a launch title. How about that, guys? Final Fantasy III triumphantly tackles the oh yeah.
Wow.
Amazing. You know, it's a launch title because it was just released on Android, Google Play on Android. So, of course, Mike, you made a point, I think, on Twitter today, where you mentioned that, yeah, basically every Android game ever is going to be coming out for the Ouya, which it lets it have a huge install base or a huge amount of games available to play. And this is not the first one you're going to see do that. I'm assuming you're going to see a ton of others start to pop up as well. But I don't see this as a, you know, I don't know why Square Enix posted this as a press release. Maybe because they wanted to say, hey, we're finally first on something.
because it's a bigger title. You're going to see a lot of indie games. Lot of no-name games coming out that, you know, people might not have necessarily heard of. And this is going to be one of the few games where people have.
Massage games, I think.
What's that?
A lot of controller massage games.
Well, I think we can agree that's the only reason that this that this thing exists is because it's gotten too hard. Xbox Live indie games, it's really gotten too hard to find my controller massage games.
That's true.
They're buried in all these other quality titles. And that's just a problem.
But you'll see a lot of those because it is a good, it's a homebrew system. And that's one thing that actually does interest me about the Ouya is the, for $99, which doesn't actually include a developer license or development kit, but you can have a device that's pretty, I'm assuming people are going to be able to hack the hell out of this thing. You'll have free development kits that the public makes floating around in no time. But
absolutely.
You'll be able to make your own games and homebrew, and it'll open up a pretty nice niche homebrew scene and a hell of a lot of piracy. I mean, that's one of the main reasons to have Android right now is to pirate the fuck out of
Well, and like, see, here's NES the thing about indie games. A lot of times, it's tough to say because sometimes I would almost argue that that piracy helps them get more sales. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, like,
sure.
if you've got a game that nobody's ever heard of, and then people start pirating it, and then you, and that gets the word out to more people that would have bought it. I mean, there's a possibility that, you know, they could actually sell more copies than they would have at the first place, but they just have a higher percentage of piracy.
Right.
Because nobody would have ever heard about it before.
It's difficult to really gauge those numbers in a bubble. So,
I think it's gonna be pretty interesting to see more games be announced as it comes, you know, becomes closer to launch. Even mm-hmm. though they are gonna be rehashes games that are already existing on Android and on, you know, iOS, but if anything, that'll at least just help kind of fill out the roster of games that people can play right when they get the device. Because the biggest thing I've seen against it is that there's no games were announced. Nobody knows why, you know, and nobody knows what was coming for this device, if it was new games or old games. We were promised new games. Nothing had been said until word broke that Robert Bowling's Robotaki is creating a prequel to Human Element, which we also know nothing about because that won't be released for at least a couple more years.
That's weird to announce a prequel to your game that's not even out. Yeah. That's not even close to out. That's weird.
Well, that happened with Dark Void, right? Dark Void and Dark Void Zero. Although that's
I like not to think about Dark Void.
Yeah. My life is a Dark Void right now. But you know, I think that at least helping announce some games is going to ease some of the fears that this isn't going to have anything available or compelling when it launches. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that a lot of the big Android games that are coming out the rest of this year will probably make it over to and you'll probably see like Angry Birds at launch as well. So for all you Angry Birds fans.
Because you need one more device to play that on.
That's right. Another device that is recently launched, as in the last couple days, is the 3DS XL, which launched in Japan and Europe. And in 2 days in Japan, it sold 200,000 units, which is below the... I think it's below what the 3DS initially sold, somewhere around like 350 or something in the first couple days. But also... you know, there still has a couple more days yet to go, but it is, to tell you the truth, it's a very successful launch for the 3DS XL, something that people started off kind of weary, wondering why you would have a larger 3DS, and it's not... Another 3DS to buy. It's not the most beautiful visuals, but it's actually, you know, from all intents and purposes, from what we've been hearing, it actually looks a lot better on a larger screen, even though you probably get some pixelation. But it's like Nintendo finally pulled the trigger early on this one, which is I guess a smart move. But they're selling pretty well, or really well, actually. 193,000 units at the Japanese launch. I think the UK launch has been selling like 10,000 to 15,000 units a day, which is great for the UK it's fantastic for a handheld launch, that's for sure. And the biggest factors there, obviously, a hardware revision and a pretty good price point. The thing is only like, what, $189 is going to be in the US? So only $20 more than the current 3DS. It's kind of boneheaded move not to buy the 3DS XL in that case, but except for portability. But I look at what the Vita is going to need to do now, because in 2 days, the 3DS XL has sold, I think somebody crunched the numbers of this on Twitter, has sold as many units as the Vita did all like the last like 3 months in Japan combined, which is it's not very good. The Vita has kind of bottomed out. It's a fantastic piece of hardware, but...
How many of those are, I guess this point's kind of moot, but how many of those are people that are upgrading from their old system though? I mean, so it's
right.
They're not all new users per se.
Correct. And I mean, a lot of the ones that are sold here in the US are going to be that exact same thing. They're going to be people saying, you know, I want to upgrade from the current. I mean, I've been noted to have issues with the 3DS. My hands just don't fit it well. It actually hurts when I play for longer than like 5 to 10 minutes because of the way it's designed. It's real. The corners are almost too sharp for my meaty palms. And so having softer corners is going to be really good for me. So I'm
definitely upgrading mine. But at the same point, it's still more sales for Nintendo. Like with, you know, every time there was a PSP revision, it seemed like people were updating their PSPs in the past. Same with the DS. So I start to wonder what Sony's going to need to do with the Vita. It's they're releasing that Assassin's Creed Liberation bundle this holiday season, so I think that you could almost rule out a price drop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really going to be interesting, because I mean, right now you can actually get Gravity Rush with the Vita for the same price as a Vita standalone. So you can get Gravity. I mean, that's a sale going on, but every week there's a sale on the Vita where you can get another game with it. I mean, I almost don't know what Sony's going to have to do. This is a really critical holiday season for them to try to catch up to what Nintendo has. And they don't have any really major launches the rest of this year, Sony, for the Vita. I mean, in the U.S., they have Little Big Planet and I think Little Big Planet Karting and PlayStation Battlestar, All-Stars Royale. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they combat, because Nintendo's got a lot of momentum right now with the 3DS. So we shall see. We shall see. And that comes to the U.S. August 12 or August 19th. So look out for that. We finally have a release date, guys, for the World of Warcraft Mists of Pandaria.
Pandas.
It is coming September 25th to the U.S.
I gotta be honest. I had kind of forgotten that World of Warcraft was still around.
You know what? It's gonna go right into our next topic as well. But I totally agree with you.
You guys are a bunch of haters.
Ryan, do you play? Have you played World of Warcraft? Are you a crafter?
I've been playing WoW since early 2005. Hmm. Never stopped. Never will.
Really?
Ever?
I played from 2005 till beginning parts of 2010.
Wow!
And then a whole new world opened up to me when I stopped playing WoW.
Well, it wasn't the World of Warcraft.
Oh, you found out you had legs, arms, a social life.
I found out there was other games. No, I didn't find a social life. Kidding? No, I found out that there was other games to play.
So are either of you guys even interested at all in Pandaria? And Ryan, it sounds like you might be a little bit more so than either of us two.
I got to be honest. I don't know.
Really?
I am getting a little tired of it. It's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't look super different. I'll probably end up getting it. I don't know if I'll play it.
I the only thing that interests me about it is pet combat. Yeah, exactly. The Pokemon game that they've like hidden inside of that expansion, and that's it. I mean, I'd be interested, you know, because I've got a bunch of non-combat pets. I've got a bunch of, you know, rare ones. I've got one from the trading card game that you can't get anymore. Like,
I still have that one that you could get when they had the World of Warcraft specific game fuel. I still have the game fuel item in World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of that.
I collected non-combat pets for a while, so I've got a bunch of them. And it'd be really cool to be able to actually do something with these like pets that I put so much time into. But it won't be enough to get me back into the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to stop anybody from, like, Blizzard losing subscribers. I don't know if this is going to be a solution to that. All the people I've been playing with for years, they're just like, it's pandas. I don't care.
Here's what's telling to me, though, is that the expansion is $30.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, previously we're looking at, you know, $40 or $50 per expansion. I think there's, you know, it's no secret that Blizzard's been working on a new MMO.
Right.
So, I mean, it's only a matter of time. I would not be surprised if Mists of Pandaria is the last expansion for World of Warcraft.
That's what I was going to ask.
I don't think so.
It's the last one.
What's that?
That's what I was going to ask, if you guys think this is the last one. I think it's the last major expansion. They may do, you know, title updates, or I mean, they have a pretty good strong revision or, you know, versioning history, but I think this is the last major one. I mean, why keep it going when the number of people just aren't spiking, you know, the numbers aren't spiking like they used to.
There's a lot of people that are dropping out of World of Warcraft, but the other thing too is that, I mean, those numbers, you can't just be like, oh, well, they lost another few hundred thousand subscribers because they've got so many, they can afford to lose those.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you've still got the people that are diehard and they're going to play. But, I mean, at some point, when you're building on one game just constantly, you know, you've got all these old game systems that you're constantly having to work around, it's going to get a little bit convoluted. And that was part of the problem that I had with it. And they did their best to try and simplify it. But, I mean, after a while, it's better to just start fresh. And either if they do come out with another expansion, I don't think it's going to be very big. I don't know. Maybe one more, but I think it's a slim chance.
I think EverQuest was still having expansions last year. I think World of Warcraft is going to keep having them for a long time, because I'm sure. This is sort of reaching into our next news point here, but everybody pretty much knows that, except for WoW, subscription based MMOs are dead.
Yes, and news just broke today that Star Wars: The Old Republic is basically going free to play to level 50, which is
show of hands, who's surprised?
I think it's.
I cut off both of my hands because I was so unsurprised.
7 months too late, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It launched right when free to play had just hit hard, you know. So people, almost every MMO after Star Wars has launched as a free to play, and even, I mean, World of Warcraft fired off the free to play shots first when they said, "Hey, by the way, you know what? You guys are free to play until level 20," which was just soon after the Old Republic launched. So, and that's to see it happen. I'm not surprised because it was going to happen, but to see it happen at this point and to find out that they now have less than a million subscribers.
They shot themselves in the foot, though. I don't feel bad for BioWare on this one at all.
Oh, no.
Mostly because, like, I was super excited about it, and I got it right away and, you know, started playing it. But to find out that the combat was essentially World of Warcraft, I mean, they really didn't do much to differentiate themselves at all. And it's like, well, you know, the story is nice, and the story is what gets people interested, but you've got to have a decent combat system to back it up, and they didn't. So it was, you know, it was kind of, I feel like they should have seen this coming before they even released the game.
Oh, I think they probably, before they released it. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But what I was saying is that if even, an MMO backed by Star Wars, you know, still an immensely popular franchise, you know, now it's got the Clone Wars, so even the little kids are into it now. If an MMO like that can't carry itself, I think it's pretty safe to say that Blizzard's next MMO is probably going to be free-to-play or something different that won't necessarily place it in competition with WoW, which is why I think they're still going to continue with expansions after that. But I think it's definitely going to be something different. It's not surprising that this happened, but it's still sort of like, wow, this is the world we live in. How about that?
You know, I think at this point, Blizzard's going to have to launch our next MMO on multiple platforms. By that, I mean not just PC and Mac, but tablets, you know, phones, because that's
what
I know. Or at least some major, you know, at least some part of their game.
Not on a touchscreen-only device.
Well, think of it this way. Maybe they won't launch the exact same MMORPG on the device, but it may be some portion of it. Maybe their next game is going to be very different from WoW. Maybe there's some strategy elements involved.
If they did something similar to what Eve and Dust are doing.
If it's two
completely separate game experiences, but they play into the same world, that would be okay.
Yeah.
Good idea.
But, you know.
You know, you look at what every other RPG that's coming, or MMORPG that's coming out from here on out. I mean, Elder Scrolls Online. We saw that at E3, and it wasn't that impressive at all. I mean, everybody left that demo thinking, it's World of Warcraft with a slight Elder Scrolls tint to it. But can they afford to launch as a subscription-based model in 2013 when they're planning on launching. I don't think they can. You know?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
You don't think they're going to squeeze out a couple months from suckers?
I don't know. You know, they may do some weird hybrid where it's, you know, a subscription gets you an auction house. No subscription, you can't use the auction house, you can't do this, you can't do that, or what.
Well, Star Wars is doing that with their thing now, isn't it?
Is that what it is?
I think it's like you can do all the quests up to level 50, which is currently the max level for your character, but then some stuff is limited, like if you have to pay a subscription, you get up to 50 items you can list on whatever their auction house thing is called, but if you don't have a subscription, it says extremely limited access. And then there's some really vague, strange sounding stuff like limited transportation access for non-subscribers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that means like you're stuck on a planet for a while, or maybe you can't do any of the spaceship missions. And you can't do the end game operations, they're called, which are like raids in World of Warcraft, sure, I think.
Sure. Yeah, one of the things that I really hate about free-to-play is they're hidden. Like, they kind of try and mask the costs of things. Like, they'll mm-hmm. say, you know, they're like, rather than say, okay, if you play for free, these are the features that you have. Like, these are the things that you can do. And if you pay a subscription, we unlock these extra modes or whatever, like these extra things, you know, that add some value. But what most free-to-play games try and do is it's like, you know, okay, you can do this, you can do this. Oh, you've run out of energy, or like, oh, you've done this too many times. Now you have to pay if you want to do it again. They get you used to using something, and then they're like, it's kind of like crack in a way. They're like, oh, you liked using that? Well, if you want to keep using it, you're going to have to pay some money. Yeah, and it's, God, it bothers me. And it honestly, I'm so turned off by free to play. Like,
it just seems like your game's free to play. You're like, oh, I bet like that's a mafia front somehow.
Except Hawken.
Yeah, but I just whenever I hear free to play, I just like, it's really hard for me to get over this like this connotation of that's gonna suck. Like,
yeah. And even if it doesn't suck, it's like immediately you think, oh, they're going to have really sketchy business practices.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be really interesting to see what these next crop of MMOs that are coming out are going to be like. You know, it's just one of those things that I think that market has very much changed. And part of that is also because people expect to pay less for you know, PC and tablet games now, thanks to like Amazon and Steam and iTunes and you know, the app stores and all that kind of stuff. People don't want to spend as much for things that aren't traditional console games.
I will say this though, is that when I spend $1 on a game on iPhone or something else, I play it for about $1 worth of time.
Yeah,
but if I buy something on 3DS or Vita, you know, chances are I'm going to actually finish that game. I have completely different playing habits depending on almost depending on how much I paid for a game. So
let's move on now. We have some PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale roster leakage. Not to be confused with anal leakage.
To be confused.
To be confused.
I don't think anybody was going to confuse that, Dolly. Why would you bring that up?
Well, I would bring it up because when you look at the characters that are being showcased, to me personally... Oh. Did you like that segue? To me...
Oh, he brings it around.
Personally... okay, let me read off the list of characters, and you guys can tell me if any of these are exciting in a an all-star combat kind of way. All right. Spoiler alert, Michael Phelps. Here we go. Dante from Devil May Cry.
Nope.
Cole McGrath from Infamous.
Nope.
Ratchet from the Ratchet & Clank series. Maybe.
A little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Raiden from the Metal Gear Solid series.
Is he going to be it again?
I don't know. I Solid Snake did nothing for me in Smash Brothers, but maybe Raiden will be a little bit cooler. Sackboy from Little Big Planet. Sir Daniel Fortesque from Medieval.
I don't even know who that is.
Exactly.
Is that the guy? He's just like a skeleton with one eyeball still remaining?
I think so.
That's bringing it back.
Heihachi Mishima from the Tekken series.
I didn't like Heihachi in Tekken, so probably not.
Toro, the PlayStation marketing icon in Japan.
That's not real. Made that up.
Nope.
Is that the one that's in Street Fighter Cross Tekken? The cat or whatever?
You know what it might be? It might be.
Is that a Japan only thing? Like Pepsi Man?
It might be. Let's run away, our cool spot.
Is Pepsi Man in it?
Yeah, it's the cat that's in Street Fighter Cross Tekken.
Okay, so he's already in a game. He's already in two games with Tekken characters. He'll probably be in that the Tekken Tag Tournament too. Nariko from Heavenly Sword.
That was an okay game, but I don't know if that's like a...
I don't think it's a compelling character.
A character that makes me go, oh yeah, I want her in more games.
Jack from Jack and Daxter.
All right, I love Jack and Daxter.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's an iconic Sony character.
Definitely.
Spike from the Ape Escape games. I don't know. It just seems like the character from... It's Spike / Diddy Kong / Super Monkey Ball. It's just another little monkey. So...
I think their biggest problem is that Sony doesn't have any iconic characters.
I think that's...
Honestly.
Well, the space Nazi guys.
are you talking about the dudes from Killzone?
Yeah, there you go.
I don't even know their name. That's terrible.
The Hellgast. Here's the thing, though, is when you look at, Super Smash Brothers, most of those characters are from the same universe, and they're almost all from first-party Nintendo titles, Like Nintendo is the only one of the three that has that real strong first party presence. It's all they have, but they do have a really strong first party presence, and that's why they can make a game that works like this. But you know, all these characters are—it's so hit and miss. It's like, yeah, you know, maybe I liked Ratchet and Clank, but what are the chances that somebody who likes Ratchet and Clank also likes Infamous, also likes Devil May Cry, also likes Little Big Planet? You know, like, if you like one Nintendo game, chances are you're probably going to like the other ones. There's no synergy for PlayStation.
Right. I think you've probably hit the nail right on the head there, and that's why it hasn't really appealed to me quite as much yet, because I don't have a specific tie to any of these characters. I didn't grow up with any of them.
Well, you did spend that night in Reno with Sackboy.
Well, that was my nickname afterwards.
Gross.
Colonel Radek loved me as Sackboy. But I think, and even a lot of these characters, like the guy from Medieval, Toro, the marketing guy, even Parappa the Rapper, and Colonel Radek. I mean, some of these characters, they've been missing in action for so long.
I think that's telling, too, because they had to go so far back to find characters that are iconic.
Whereas you look at what Nintendo did, and even though Nintendo still has their kind of base set of characters, you're going to get Donkey Kong in there, you're going to get Koopa, you'll get Mario, Link. When they throw in some obscure character from the past, everyone's like, oh my god, yeah, I totally remember that finger hand from the stupid 8-bit or the stupid portable LCD game. Well, that's awesome that they threw it in there. If Sony did that, people would be like, what the fuck are you doing, Sony? Why would you put that in there? It's almost like Sony needs to scale back the amount of characters and just focus on what are the most popular like Sony characters right now, and just include those. And like, you know, and even that, though, like what you're saying, Mike, kind of hits it as well. They're from completely different universes and completely different people are buying these games. You know, a Kratos player probably won't be picking up, won't care much about Sir Daniel Fortesk from Medieval.
Right.
So.
I just don't know why they're making this game. Like, even with characters.
Well, I know why they're making this game. It's
money.
Yeah, it's a cash grab, honestly. That's what I think. I think that they're trying to squeeze this in.
Make cash, though? I don't.
No, I don't, because I think they're missing the point. I wrote a preview about this like when we were at E3, and it was basically about, you know, how they like they copied everything about Smash Brothers except for the key part that makes it fun, which is like the randomness and chaotic nature of Smash Brothers. And they made it so it's like, okay, the only way you can kill somebody is with a super move. And it's like, yeah, well,
mistake.
That's not fun. Like, yeah, so
you know, I mean, almost
you beat up on somebody and it doesn't do you any good.
I almost wish that Sony did what everybody always wanted Nintendo to do, which was say, hey, you know what? I want Mega Man, I want Simon Belmont, I want Sonic the Hedgehog, I want some of these specific character, these classic third party characters in a fighting game, and all they got was Sonic. But you know, I think that's what Sony should have done, and say, hey, instead of focusing on just Sony PlayStation folks,
where's Alucard?
Exactly. They should have taken all of these. They should have taken these classic characters and grabbed all them and thrown them in a game. Because then all of a sudden you're starting to think, all right, these are some cool classic characters that are on, you know, all over the place. I'd love to play. I'd love to have Alucard take on. Take on the car from Gran Turismo. That'd be amazing. So, anyways, that's the leaked roster. Steven Straub is probably busting it up because he's so excited about all those characters, but I think he might be the only one.
Toro.
You guys, I can't wait to play as Sir Daniel Fortes.
Can't wait. Wow, Steven, when did you get on call? Last bit of news. This is so far maybe most pertinent because Mike and I were there last year. E3 is staying in wonderful Los Angeles through 2015. Next year, it's June 11th through 13th. The rumors were swirling that because of the new stadium they're building and they're rerouting the traffic and they're, you know, it's going to be tough to get parking and hotels and blah, 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 that it'll be, you know, they're going to move it to another city. It'd be great to move it to, like, Chicago or back to San Fran or New York or whatever. But no, it's going to be staying in L.A. now through Boner 15. So,
yeah, that's a shame.
Proximity,
not a fan of LA.
Yeah, I think anybody who's been to LA, especially during E3, understands why it sucks. Ryan, hopefully you can make it out there next year, but it's LA.
I don't think I want to. From everything I hear about it, it sounds awful.
No, it's great, man.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You love it. I have already booked
in the city.
What, now that they determined the dates, I went ahead and booked the room, so I do have a room for E3, so if anybody wants to crash. I think my brother's going to be staying with us.
Where did you book
a little slumber party and do our nails?
We can talk about that after.
We can talk about that afterwards. I'm very close to the downtown area. Walking distance this time, so. That is the news.
Is the city as bad as everybody says?
Oh, God, yes.
It's pretty bad. I got shot when I was there.
And I actually shot a guy that looked like Mike.
it was really bizarre. 5 feet away.
Yeah.
This happened when we were standing right next to each other.
It was really amazing.
I think you shot Mike. Actually, Mike.
Shit.
Wait a minute.
You just incepted this podcast. Oh, let's move on to Overheard on Game Chat. The segment of the show where we're going to talk a little bit about what people have been chatting about on Game Chat. This week's topic was best game of the generation. Game of the Gen. Hashtag Game of the Gen. We asked the question, what's the best game of this console generation?
Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Why? Okay, well, you mentioned KOTOR 2 right away. Why did you mention that?
I think it's funny to troll people.
You could do that in KOTOR 2?
What's that?
You can troll people in KOTOR 2?
No. People hate that game, and it's not of this generation. But
that's true.
I love that
game,
actually. It's a masterpiece.
The parameters, by the way, were it had to be a game released on the current generation console, so Xbox 360, PS3, Wii, DS, and PSP, only because they were the big chunk. And then, obviously, iOS and PC. Steam type of thing. So
Angry Birds. I like Angry Birds.
Hey guys, I really think that Infamous and Infamous 2 were staples in the Universal.
Are those Steve's favorite games?
They probably are. They cannot be.
Which means they probably
actually
no.
Steven's favorite game. Actually, he told me it was Splinter Cell Conviction.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was.
I listed BioShock, which I absolutely love. That game has just some awesome writing to it, and just a phenomenal story. And it's the action is actually all right. It's not special, the first person stuff, but the world that it's wrapped in, the environments, the storytelling, the lighting, the character design, and the crazy twist at the end. Spoilers. I can't remember the guy's name, but he's the other guy. So,
Atlas.
Yeah. I loved it. Nathan, former side questing writer, Nathan writes Borderlands for him.
That's a good choice, I think.
Yeah, that's a pretty good choice. There's some flaws with Borderlands that would keep it from, you know, being on my short list, but
yeah. I think as a PC game it was super popular. Super popular. Yeah. Fallout 3 came up a lot, and this was like Chris Majewski and a couple other folks mentioned it. Fallout 3, even Andrew, one of our new writers, mentioned it. Basically, they did everything, almost everything correctly. They had Liam Neeson. They had a lot of bugs, which was great. So that was a real popular one. You guys kind of agree? Fallout 3 is up there?
Fallout 3 was pretty good. It doesn't hold up for me. I couldn't go back and play it, but I played it twice back-to-back when it first came out. So, I couldn't disagree.
I've played like 300 hours of it.
Wow.
I know. Part of me wants to say it's the best game of this generation because there are some things in it that are just so emblematic of the best parts of games from this generation, particularly like the emergent gameplay stuff that could just happen. Like one time, it has random encounters. This is one thing I really missed from New Vegas, is that it had random encounters where everywhere you walked, there was just a random chance that something would happen.
Yep.
And it could be like you meet like a couple bugs that try to eat you, or there's one where like a spaceship falls out of the sky.
Oh, yeah, that DLC, the spaceship,
But one time I just found a doctor, and I just followed them around the wastes for 5 real-life hours protecting her from other NPCs. And that was some of the most fun I've had this generation. But I struggle to call it one of the best games because it's still like nigh broken.
Dylan Sabin writes, Portal 2, such a superb improvement on the concepts of the original game. That was just released last year. It was... I think it was it our game of the year? I think it may have been our game of the year. I loved Portal 2. I don't think it was the best, but I definitely loved it. I thought it was, one. It's one of my favorites, definitely. And then you have Corey Rollin. Poor Corey.
JRPGs. JRPGs.
He writes, it's a 3-way tie between Lost Odyssey, Xenoblade Chronicles, and Nier. It's like choosing between your children. Huh. He wants to have a 3-way with his children. I actually have Lost Odyssey. I haven't cracked it open yet, but I was hoping to eventually get it before this generation ends. I've had it for 4 years sitting on my shelf. Same thing with Xenoblade. I've only played like maybe 2 hours Xenoblade, and Nier I will never touch. But Corey likes the JRPGs, so good for him. Slightly Rattled writes, definitely the Uncharted series. And Mike, you even chimed in with Uncharted 2, which is maybe right up there for me, maybe right behind BioShock.
Is that your choice, Mike? Uncharted 2?
It's a toss-up. But, we'll get to my other one, I'm sure. But, Uncharted 2 is just so much... It's cinematically just so good.
There was so much trouble with that sound that you just did.
Mike's actually Cobra Commander.
He's actually Cobra Commander.
It could have been a movie without sacrificing gameplay, and that's the hardest thing. Sure. Sometimes you work so hard to make something cinematic, and so you start to rely on quick time events or just weird little tricks like that. But instead, Uncharted relied on really really intricate and innovative set pieces, like entire buildings collapsing while you fight inside them, or the train sequence. Yeah. Just
that was amazing. Oh god.
It was just ridiculous how technologically impressive that game was while being entertaining at the same time.
What I really like is just so many of the small touches of it. Like when you're crawling underneath something, Nate will like reach up and like put his hand on the side of the wall or above
yeah,
it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of context-sensitive stuff. Like when I was when you're getting chased as a kid and you run through that kitchen, if you run through the middle of the room, nothing happens. But the second time I did it, I ran through on like the right side of the room where there was a refrigerator, and he just automatically throws the freezer door open and hits the guy in the face who was behind him. Like just things like that happened automatically based on where you happen to be.
And it's such a contrast to other games, because like in other games you'll like stand on something, and this happened to me. I was playing L.A. Noire the other day, and I stood on something. And then the other leg was slightly elevated, so the leg just started jerking up and down until it eventually like phased out of the character and started stretching into the sky.
And well, I mean, that's realism, right?
It was 1947. That's what happens. I mean,
it's a different time back then.
Different time, different morals.
Mike, you also mentioned Arkham City.
Yeah, Arkham City. It's got
Batman game. That's
got Batman, which I am a fan of the Batman. No, but the combat is ridiculously fun, and that that comprises most of the game. But also, what really impressed me is that after you finish the main story, there's still other things that go on within Arkham City for you to go back. And a lot of open world games have like, oh, find all the hidden packages or shoot all these pigeons or something dumb like that. But this one, they actually make it feel like it's worth your time. It almost feels like the story didn't end and that there's still more important things that are happening inside the city.
Is it like side quests that you didn't finish or new stuff actually happens?
Well, there are some new things that actually happen, but also also side quests that I didn't finish. The DLC is really great. It's just surprising to me to see them get so much mileage out of a superhero game. When notoriously like superhero games have been kind of shallow, they did the right thing is making this separate from any sort of movie franchise that's coming out, putting it in its own universe and giving themselves complete freedom to do what they want. And it made an excellent game.
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of mentions of Uncharted. A lot of mentions of, I think there were a lot of mentions of Arkham Asylum, actually. And Fallout 3, Bioshock, I'm seeing League of Legends. So there's quite a few. They're all wrong, though. It was obviously the WarioWare game for the Wii. So.
I got to throw Mass Effect out there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. What was your choice?
I think it's got to be Mass Effect.
Yeah.
The first one specifically.
Okay, good man.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that one.
I don't know. It's just something about it. When I go back and play those, there's something that seems not just the obvious stuff like the gameplay, like the gun shooting or the lack of explorable new planets in the sequels, which is one thing I really love. I think that is one of my key points of why I like it so much. The whole point is this vast explorable galaxy filled with mysteries and adventure, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You can actually go explore it and stuff. But a lot subtler things that you don't really notice until you go back to the first one. Like going from the first one to the second one, you don't notice it, but when you go back, it's there. And it's mostly like the way that not the cutscenes. Well, yeah, the cutscenes too. But the conversations between characters, the camera, and the way it positions and moves seems just so different. And I don't know what it is about it. More personal, I guess, more engaging. But I think part of why I also like it, aside from that, is that it just had that sense of wonder and like, wow, this is so cool. And then the sequels were great. I still love them. I don't want to talk about the ending. Mass Effect 3, that is.
Still haven't played 3.
Shepard kills Dumbledore.
Well, I knew about that.
But it doesn't have any of the disappointment that the other ones do for whatever reason.
Sure.
Well, maybe a little bit, because before it came out, I was super hopeful about it.
But I think the only real disappointment that I may have noted on that game was just some of the repetition in the side quests.
Quests off the side. The inventory, that was so bad.
But
I completely scrapped it in the other ones.
Yeah.
I like some inventory in my RPG. Well, not some. I like inventories that are good, just not shitty.
I will say that the ending to the first Mass Effect blew me away completely. Yeah, yep. Like I had to just like sit there in silence for a little bit after finishing that game. So
still the best of the series. Well, with that said, let's take a little break right now. We'll be back after the flip. Talk a little bit about what we've been playing. Welcome, everyone. We are back. The next big segment, What We've Been Playing, whatever we decide to call it. I think we've called it What Are You Playing, What We've Been Playing. But you know what it is. We're going to talk about some of the stuff that we've been playing. What games we've been gaming. Let's start with Mike. Mike, you have one that just released.
I just released Orcs Must Die 2. Yeah, I just started playing this actually about an hour before we recorded the podcast, so not super far into it. I've been playing it co-op with John Perry.
So in other words, you're still playing the game right now.
Yeah, actually still playing the game right now as we speak. Words. No, it's pretty good. It's tower defense. I mean, anywhere you want to slice it. It reminds me a lot of... I actually didn't play the first one, so a lot of these are just my impressions of Orcs Must Die as a whole, but it reminds me a lot of Dungeon Defenders.
Oh, okay, sure.
That's essentially how it plays out, but with a little bit more emphasis on the traps that you lay down and how you lay them down. So it's got a little bit of, if you played Sanctum, Sanctum's got kind of the freeform grid layout where you place traps, you know, wherever you want. You can actually change the layout of the level based on how you place your traps. But they've got some really interesting ones. I mean, there's obviously you can put this shooter on the wall that shoots out arrows at things that walk by, or you can put some traps on the ground that slow people down so that they get hit more by your damaging traps. One of the cool things, one of the coolest traps that I've seen so far is a launcher. Basically, it's a springboard where, you know, the orcs will walk over the springboard and then it'll launch them off into a pit or something like that. And it's got, I'm a sucker for any game with ragdoll physics. So
sure,
yeah. Yep, so seeing enemies flop into a ravine or crevasse is pleasing to me. But yeah, pretty good. It's co-op this time around, and that makes it worth the second game.
Do you control a guy?
Yeah, you control a man, and you've got attacks, and you can upgrade your weapons, and get different bonuses and things that you unlock for doing well in the different levels.
But you place the things through him, like you.
Right, he runs around and actually places down traps.
So okay. if you're playing co-op, you're both setting up traps everywhere.
Yeah, and you don't have to be standing right next to wherever you place a trap. Anywhere you can see in the level, that's a placeable a surface that you're allowed to place traps on, you can do it even if you're standing like a mile away.
Oh, so you don't have to walk over there.
No, you don't have to walk over there. As long as you can see it, you can probably place a trap there. There's a few restrictions.
So it's like it's third person, right? Basically,
third person. Yeah.
So, are there multiple floors on multiple levels within each room, or?
Well, yeah, there's different pathways and things like that, and that actually it works out to some pretty interesting setups to where there was one where like there's two walkways to get towards the goal where you're supposed to prevent the orcs from getting to, and I had those like springboard traps set up to try and toss them into the middle, just down the hole. But depending on how big the enemy is and how much how much he weighs, I guess, they would launch either further or not quite as far. So sometimes certain enemies would actually get just launched down onto the second platform. where John was fighting, and it would actually make it more difficult for him. Just by chance.
Are you into other like tower defense style games?
I'm kind of sick of tower defense, to be quite honest with you. Yeah. It's got to be something. It's got to be something unique. And it's got to hide the fact that it's tower defense.
Oh sure.
And this one, and Orcs Must Die 2 isn't quite so mechanical, I guess is the right word for it. You know, just really formulaic. It's not like that, like other tower defense games are. And so I think, you know, I can tolerate the fact that it is tower defense.
Yep.
And you know, playing it with another person goes a long ways towards making it feel fresh.
How long is the game? I mean, first of all, does it have like a storyline that's involved?
I can tell you that the game is at least a half an hour long.
That's good.
I've been playing it for about that long, and it's not over yet. It does have a story, and the story is actually kind of like, you know, it's got a little cutscene that it plays at the beginning, and the different characters that you play as. There's two different ones. There's the guy from the first game, and then there's also a sorceress. Who's new to the second game, and they've got kind of some banter. Usually plays out at the very beginning of the level.
Mm-hmm.
They'll kind of talk back and forth, and usually it amounts to the guy hitting on the girl, and just something witty like that. And it's interesting to hear. It probably won't be interesting your second time through a level, but you know, there's a little bit of a story. Pretty much, it's just there's a lot of orcs, you got to kill them.
You're playing this on PC then, right? Is it through Steam?
Yeah. Yeah, playing it through Steam. It supports an Xbox controller too, so I mean, if you want to play it that way, you can. And like most games that support an Xbox controller, the controls are already set up. That's kind of the nice thing about using Xbox controllers on PCs is that most games just support it right out of the box without any setup.
So it controls pretty well, then, is what you're saying.
It controls pretty well. Yep.
One thing that Robot's really well known for is their art style and really bringing kind of a cool design direction, art direction to their games. The first game had a little bit of that. Does this game have kind of a... What are your thoughts on the art style, I should say?
Actually, one of the first things that I was thinking just by chance when I booted up the game is that we're starting to see more and more games with this art style, this kind of like kind of cartoony, you know, like a little bit of like World of Warcraft influence in it. I don't see it's really that, you know, it's not unique, I wouldn't say. I mean, it's something that, you know, we've seen a lot in other games.
You know, you bring up a good point that of how games are slowly starting to move away from realism, even as these powerful new consoles are starting to show up. You're getting your Uncharted, you're getting your Assassin's Creed and Call of Duties, but now you're starting to see more games like Orcs Must Die 2 and Borderlands.
I think that really stems from casual games, a lot of like iOS games, in order to cope with the fact that it's, you know, that it's not more powerful hardware, are defaulting back to this art style. And a lot of these indie devs that are getting their roots in, in mobile gaming are kind of carrying that over into their PC titles as well, PC and Xbox titles.
Very cool.
Even Epic in their first Unreal Engine 4 game is all cartoony. Fortnite, it's all cute cartoony stuff.
It's so surprising to me because I would think that they'd want to go with something that would accentuate.
Have more chainsaw guns and blood explosions.
Well, no, not necessarily another dude bro shooter, but like,
nice.
You know, just something that you know, says, hey, look how realistic we can make things look. You know, like, this.
Look how real we can make this guy's head explode.
My mommy and daddy are dead.
Scratch one dead parent.
Well, maybe, you know, like if a guy's smoking a cigar or something and be like, look how awesome this smoke looks. Or
well, they did.
Look at all the pores.
Tech demo they had. The guy was smoking. They were like, look at this cigarette.
Long pause.
I hope the new Mario game is Unreal Engine 4.
Mario's parents are dead. Well, very cool. So it's out now. Picked it up and it's
cool. Pick it up in a pair. Don't pick it up by yourself.
Yeah, that's the other thing I've heard is get, you know, definitely do the duop thing and do the co-op. Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Ryan, what have you been playing, man? Tell us a little about the Spec Ops.
I've been playing Spec Ops. Spec Ops The Line.
Speaking of dude bros.
A little bit. But not really. That's sort of why it's so great. Have you heard a lot about it, Mike? Or not?
I played it for I played it for maybe 15 minutes ish at E3, and I was actually distracted by the booth attendant flinging a T-shirt over my head while I was trying to play it.
Because you were trying to catch that T-shirt, is what you're trying to say.
What's that?
You're trying to catch that T-shirt, and you had to put the controller down.
You were harassing the booth, babe. No, let's be honest. No, you're a bad person.
No, I went to play it, and like as I'm playing the game, like somebody like flings a T-shirt over me, and I thought somebody like tripped or like was falling into me or something. And I was just like, what the hell is this? Get it off me. But yeah, no, it seemed pretty good. I mean, it had like the thing that was weird about it in the short time that I played it was that it seemed like they were going for like a Gears of War style control scheme, but they like changed a couple of things just so that they weren't using the exact same control scheme.
Yeah, and that doesn't work out so great. It's a little the cover system can be a little messy. You don't always get where you really want to be.
Uh-huh.
But the real like good thing about the game is that it sort of tricks you into thinking it's just an average dude bro shoot some people kind of game, but it still is that, but it's also a lot more than that.
So like four or five dude bros.
No.
How many dude bros out of dude bros is this game?
So, I don't know how to answer in that metric.
You have to go to Metric Critic to figure that one out. How so the big thing about this game has been the whole kind of moral the storyline and the moral choices, that aspect. How did you feel after have you completed the game, or are you still trying to?
Yeah, I completed the game.
Okay, what do you think about that whole side of things?
Is it okay to spoil BioShock?
Yeah,
it's sort of a similar.
It came out better be.
5 years ago. I mean,
would you kindly spoil BioShock?
The end of that, when it reveals how, like, whenever the guy says, "Would you kindly," it's like a secret brain command for your character. And it's like, oh, look at that. Aren't we clever? We're using that as a metaphor for the player mindlessly doing what we tell them.
Yeah.
And this is sort of similar. I don't want to spoil this one, but it's sort of similar in that the writer, Walt Williams, I want to say. I can't quite remember.
Walt Whitman.
What's that?
Walt Whitman.
I don't think that. He didn't know. Did Dubai exist when he wrote that? I don't know. What the hell was I talking about?
Just the choices, you know, the story of the moral choice. Yeah,
one of the characters, like your squad mates, he's like the typical make jokes. Like the first thing he says as soon as you start the game is like a joke about something in his pants. But then later he becomes like the most staunchly moral one of your little squad. But what the writer said was that he wanted to use this game to make people think about why they want to play games where you kill tons of people. And it sort of rang hollow with me a little bit, the same way BioShock did. Because it's like, look at this. You did this. This is your fault, player one. And it's like, you made this choice to do this. And it's the only real other choice the game ever lets you make is you could turn it off. I think the writer actually said that in an interview with some other website. I can't think of which one. He's like, you don't have to be playing this. You don't have to be killing these fake people to make yourself feel good. You could turn it off. And it's like, I paid $60. I'm not turning it off. You suck.
What mode did you play this in? Easy, normal?
I played it on normal. Okay.
Because I've heard people say that, you know, just play it in easy, play it in the easiest level, and plow through the game. That way you can murder everybody easily, but you get the moral choices a little bit better.
Yeah, that's – well, and also one thing, I played it on normal because if you one thing that really does a lot of I do want to say I like it. I don't really like the trick of this is all your fault, player, but I still really like the game and admire what it tries to do. The same way I did BioShock.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things it does really well, like I said, it subverts a lot of stuff you come to expect from other games, is that the loading screen, when you start out, it'll be like, press triangle to reload, or get bonus points for doing this.
Steven?
but towards the end, it'll be like, the loading screens will say, how many Americans have you killed today? You feel like a hero yet?
Huh.
There's one part where you use white phosphorus to burn people to death, basically, and when a loaded screen is like, white phosphorus burns at 1,500 degrees Celsius a second. You suck. It really tries to make you feel like a bad guy.
Hmm.
And, I'm losing sight of what I was trying to say.
So, you know, I mean, maybe it succeeds, but I guess it just was kind of hollow for you. I mean, one of the quotes, and I know Ludwig Kietzmann over at Joystick in his review kind of mentioned it. You know, he talked about this. He said, it's disappointing and often baffling when Spec Ops underlines its themes with an orange crayon. You know, the discovery of a strung-up mutilated corpse is meant to shock, but the scene feels deflated alongside an achievement notification that essentially says, war is terrible, have 10 points. Sounds like you're kind of running into the same thing with how they're portraying that war is terrible to you, obviously.
I can't think of how to explain it without spoiling it, because I still think it's really great. Like,
how about not? Not spoiling it. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
The last thing I don't want to spoil, because, like, just playing it, the gun shooting is not great.
Yeah,
it's
tell
not
me.
Really, like,
so,
it's okay.
So is the action in the game, how does it play when compared to, like, you know, other FPS shooters?
Oh, it's a third-person shooter, you know, like Gears.
Right.
It plays okay. Like, it's totally competent and it's fine. But like, I'm not even going to touch the multiplayer. I don't know why anybody would.
Yeah, I heard that's not doing well.
You're really playing it for like the experience that it takes you through,
mm-hmm.
and I can't figure out how to I don't know. I don't really want to discuss it without spoiling it.
So
like the one thing that makes this game worthwhile.
So it's more of like a story-based, you know, single-player FPS game with like some multiplayer tagged on because they think they need to have it for
exactly.
The genre. Sure. Would you recommend people at least try this game out or?
Yeah, I think if you can get it from GameFly or rent it or borrow it from somebody, I think it really does some really cool things with video games and the way they work.
You're the second person that's actually said get it from GameFly. Tyler, who was just he and I were having a good conversation earlier today about this game. I said, you know, I think I'll probably end up just renting it because it's a 6-hour or so game, so I can't I don't have a lot of time to put into it. And he said, yeah, definitely. He used GameFly because he wanted to get through it, and he said it brings so much discussion about the industry.
Yeah.
And there's even a writer, Brandon Coe, is writing a book about just this game and what that's done to the industry. So sounds like you kind of agreeing with that sentiment.
Yeah, I think it's definitely worth playing.
Sure. So you've been playing another wartime game in Battlefield 3, which is not new, but it's relevant, I think, because Battlefield 4 was just announced. So what do you tell us a little about Battlefield 3? What at least Let me come at this from a different way. First of all, why are
come
you...
Come at me, bro.
Yeah, I'm going to come at you, bro. Why are you just getting into Battlefield 3 right now? The only reason I'm asking is because there's... everybody's gearing up for, you know, Medal of Honor, Black Ops 2. Battlefield is still relevant. They just announced today, I think there's like 1.3 million members in the Battlefield Elite service. But are you just getting into Battlefield 3 now for the first time, or...
I played the beta, and I played it for a match or two when it came out,
mm-hmm.
But then it just got lost in, you know, the sea of other releases last holiday season, and I mostly stuck with Call of Duty. I always liked the Battlefield franchise better. I like the expansiveness of the battles and all the vehicles and everything,
mm-hmm.
But most of my friends play Call of Duty, so I just stuck with them. But I got really mad at Call of Duty, and I knew I was getting close to breaking my controller, so I sold it. And I don't have anything to play now, so I just popped in Battlefield 3.
So what?
And I hate it.
You hate Battlefield 3. Tell me why you hate it. No,
I hate it. It feels like it doesn't work. Really? I can't believe how popular this is.
So what do you mean it doesn't work?
Like, more than Call of Duty, more than any other game I play, it feels like it's affected by lag and latency. Like, what I see is definitely not what happens. Like, one time, very distinctly, I remember I saw a couple of guys coming, and I went inside a building and waited for them, and I ducked down and got in the corner. And one of them comes in, and I had an assault rifle, and I pointed at him. I zoomed on the iron sights and everything, and I think I got about 13 rounds fired, and I got hit markers and everything. And then he had a shotgun, and on my screen, it shows him, he points the shotgun away from me. No noise or gun blast comes out. I die, and then afterwards, the shotgun blast comes. And stuff like that happens all the time when I play Battlefield. Have you guys noticed that? Is it just me?
I noticed that in online shooters in general. Particularly ones that are supposed to be quote-unquote realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, the one thing that really got me more so than... I love Battlefield Bad Company 2 and the first Bad Company and Battlefield 2 for that matter. But for some reason, it felt like... I don't know if this was something to do with they had the tactical flashlight guns that you could shine at other people. But... when you transitioned from dark to light, like from an underground tunnel to light, it felt like that transition happened for the most insignificant things, like in a tree under the shade and then walk out away from it. It would have that same sort of like blinding sensation transition. And it's just, I couldn't see anything like anywhere in the game. It's always really hard to see things.
You know, it's I played a little bit of Bad Company 2, and so I thought, you know, Battlefield 3 might be pretty similar to that. It's actually quite different, but a lot of those same Battlefield Bad Company 2 players moved on over to Battlefield 3. I'm curious to see if anybody who's played Battlefield 3 has gone back to Bad Company 2 at all. And what their thoughts might be on other dice related games. Are you looking forward to Medal of Honor Warfighter at all?
Yeah, I actually I am surprisingly excited for that. I really liked the last one a lot more than I thought I would.
Okay.
It's multiplayer. It really jammed with me. It was like halfway between Call of Duty and halfway between Battlefield, and I really liked it for some reason. And I'm really looking forward to that.
It sounds like from their investor call today, EA sound like they're almost starting to downplay a little bit of Medal of Honor. Just in general, is kind of like just obviously they want to push Battlefield as their main Call of Duty fighter. But it's gonna be interesting to see how that game actually does. Call of Duty this year, apart from Warfighter, its biggest. Competition is going to be Halo 4, which releases, which launches like a week before or something. So actually, launches before. Yeah, it launches on Election Day. Halo 4 does so.
Master Chief, I cannot believe that.
Yeah, Master Chief does not want you to vote for the U.S. government. See,
Illuminati conspiracy.
It's the Illuminati. So it'll be an interesting thing to see if people are. And of course, Borderlands is going to be popping out slightly before then. You have a bunch of releases in October. It'll be interesting to see how Warfighter does this year. So I'll be curious to check that out.
I just want to point out to all the haters, in case they're listening, it's not because I'm bad at the game. Battlefield 3, I got to a 1.7. No, I got to 1.83 kill death ratio.
Ooh, I have no idea what that means.
I killed a lot of dudes because I'm good.
Every time he dies, he kills.
Even though I hate it.
Oh, 1.83. Nice. I probably have a .000001, which means every time I die, somebody kills me four times. I think from four further times because I'm absolutely horrible.
Every time somebody kills Dolly in an online video game, an angel gets its wings.
That's so true. There's a lot of angels floating around. Thanks, Ryan. It's good to see that people are still keeping the EA ship afloat with guys like you. Are you an Elite or Battlefield Elite user at all? Or whatever?
No.
Battlefield Premium, is that what it's called? Premium?
Yeah, that's what it's called. Elite Call of Duty.
I get mixed up all the time. Okay. Well, I have been playing a couple iOS games because I've been playing Mass Effect 3, but I won't get into that because that's months old at this point. But played a couple new release iOS games, and for two reasons, and I'll get into this right now. The first game is called Bitless, and it's by it's a single developer, Nicholas Rapp, just an indie dude. In fact, his website for the game is actually a Facebook account, a Facebook fan page. So
that's indie.
That's super indie. He has the game is essentially a mix of like Super Meat Boy and Cannibalt and VVVVVVVVVVVV. In that it's got like super retro style graphics. It's one touch mechanics, so either you're touching a screen or not, and if you touch a screen, he jumps, and that's all he does. And obviously, like VVVVV, there's just crazy traps and puzzle solving involved everywhere, and like Cannibalt, you're constantly running, you're constantly moving, and when he hits a wall, he turns around and goes back. By the way, he's a little like square bit, just a block on the screen. Very retro visuals. It's like Atari 2600 style, if maybe even before then. And then there's a little bit of Super Meat Boy thrown in there, in that there's so many traps and there's bosses and there's bad guys in the game that you can you're going to be dying often, just hundreds and hundreds of times, you know, per level. But it just restarts you at the beginning of the level, and you go through it again. But because it restarts you at the beginning of the level, you can make it to the very end and just be like a hair pixel shy of a jump and die and have to redo the entire level. I think I died at
that doesn't point. Sound fun.
You know
that
what?
Sounds like pain.
It is pain, and it's definitely pain. But that's what he was going for. And there's like 100 levels, I think, in this game. I'm only in the world. I think it's called World R, which is
the pirate level.
R.
Oh, you went there, Mike. I was thinking of it, but I was like, no, I'm not gonna go for a joke that dumb. But you went.
No, there's no joke too dumb.
There's not on this podcast, at least. So it's super basic. It's just blocks, and I mean, there's things like you have to jump over platforms, you have to jump onto platforms. If you hit a wall, you turn around and come back. So you have to kind of time your jumps. You can bounce, climb up walls, go down walls, slide across. So it's kind of interesting for that reason. The other iOS game I played is called Party Wave, which was made by Mistwalker. So they're the guys that whoever the creator of Mistwalker is was basically the grandfather of Final Fantasy, right? So he's the one that created the Final Fantasy games, the producer for all those years, and now he's making an iOS surfing game. The entire studio is. So the surfing game is like this part, it's called Party Wave, and essentially it's set up in two zones or two modes. As the game starts up or the level starts up, you have to, almost like those air traffic control games where you have to kind of guide the surfers into the wave breaking and keep them there for a split second for the wave to come over and break. So you get all your surfers in one area, so you got to avoid the sharks and rocks and seashells and squids and electric eels in the water to make it there. And then it switches into that's like in top view. Then it switches into a side view surfing game, kind of like those old NES surfing games out there, which were great, by the way. Whereas it's a good surfing game, there hasn't been one in ages. But the only way to control the game is you tap on the, you tap on the surfer to get them.
Is your surfer like the little spot logo for like the 7-Up game?
I wish. They're actually kind of these super deformed little cartoon people. Very Flash style game. And you just tap the character and they turn around, they try to go back up the wave. So super high polish in this game, but very casual based. So the two games, Bitless, super hardcore, designed by one person. actually lots of fun because of how simple it is, and how you want to kind of rip your hair out sometimes because you'll make it to the very end and die and have to redo the whole thing again. Then you get Party Wave, which is super casual, had a lot of money went into it to create it. It's a surfing game by a bigger developer, yet it's not very fun.
Ouch.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, that's it's kind of odd to see, and that's what iOS and Android and maybe the OEI will be good for, is to see these independent developers who can actually do some interesting things. Bitlisp is far and away a lot more enjoyable, even with its massive frustration. It's a lot more enjoyable than Party Wave is. Party Wave is just so casual, so boring. I don't even think people that are into casual games are going to be really into Party Wave. So, yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's one of those things where the indie got it right, guys. The indie got it right. You have any questions for me on the game, or is that basically that I think I explained it enough.
I pretty much get the gist of it.
Yeah,
sounds like you surf.
Basically, you surf, and there's blocks. Let's move on to the final little mini segment right now. We're going to play a little bit of Hot Potato Word Association. The first person to not play or not capitalize on the previous word is going to lose. So you guys know what word association is, right? So someone's going to say something. You're supposed to say the very first thing that comes to your mind. The next person will say the first thing that comes to their mind based off of what that person said. So since there's three of us playing, you have to somewhat relate it to the word that was or the phrase or sentence that was said. Said before you. So I'll go first. Ryan.
Do we have a broad theme?
Let's just say I don't know. How about
that's the theme.
Let's go with MMORPGs. That'll be the theme. MMORPGs. Okay. I'll start. Ryan, you have to chime in, and then Mike, you'll chime in after based off of what Ryan says, and we'll just kind of keep going around in a circle. First person to drop the potato loses. So I'll start.
Does it only have to be one word?
One word or phrase. Just the okay. First thing that comes to your mind. Okay, I'll start with Mists of Pandaria.
Goldshire Cybering.
That's not a thing that happens, is it?
Oh, anybody familiar with World of Warcraft knows about Cybering and Goldshire.
And Mike, your turn.
I think I win.
I think Mike has already dropped the potato.
There was never a potato.
We had planned this segment to go 5 minutes.
just edit it down. Okay. Edit it down. That's what you'll do.
Yeah.
No, it won't.
We planned this segment to go 5 minutes, and Mike was able to kill it within the first. Like 30 seconds.
It's the 30 seconds that took 5 minutes.
The behind closed doors, the 30 seconds took 5 minutes. Well, we'll move on. Maybe we'll set it up in the comments. People can play a little bit of Hot Potato in the comments.
Play the home version because this one turned out so well.
Play the home version.
Play the home version of Goldshire Cybering.
I don't know what that is, but I'm going to have to look that up while I'm at work. Is that that's safe for work, right?
To give it a brief explanation, people think that on role-playing realms, all the role players do is go to the inns in the game, get naked, and do cyber sex with their World of Warcraft characters. But that doesn't actually happen, because what happens most is people who think that and think it's funny go to RP servers and do it themselves. So if you go to Goldshire, which is the starting, like, first village for humans, when you create a human character, it's lit. The whole town is just filled with just naked characters cybering and doing ridiculous stuff. It's like the 4chan of World of Warcraft.
I wonder how Peter Jackson's going to portray the Goldshire in the Hobbit films.
I was on Reddit. I saw somebody post about how they were in an inn in it was probably one of those starting areas, and they heard somebody screaming, like yelling in chat, like, "Oh God, it hurts!" Went in and found saw a blood elf sitting on a bench, and then like this other blood elf, like dressed in white, was like, "It's a boy." And then a level one blood elf logged on right where they were standing. Oh.
That's amazing. That's an entire life and birth and death told in a matter of seconds on World
that's
of Warcraft.
That's role-playing. That's real.
That's hardcore role-playing. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping before we sign off.
Housekeeping!
Want me to fluff your pillows? Email us with all your questions, comments, caca, whatever, to podcast@sidequesting.com.
Don't mail us your poop.
podcast@sidequesting.com. Yes, please don't send any photographs of your poop. Just email us with questions, comments. We will read them on the air because we will hopefully get some. we have a quick little announcement. We are starting a beer brewers club here on SideQuesting. So if you are even remotely interested in brewing your own beer, stick around or shoot us an email to the same email address, podcast@sidequesting.com. We are going to start the brewing club for people that don't know how to brew beer, and which is, includes me. So you will all kind of learn at the same time. Should be fun.
Do you accept root beer?
Possibly, maybe. We'll see. Please click on the Amazon links. I'll try to get a banner up or something. You don't have to buy anything that we link you to, but if you're just floating on Amazon one day and find the art of Dr. Seuss's Cat in the Hat movie, kill yourself. But at least you can, if you buy it, you'll have send a little bit of money towards us, which helps us pay our bills, keeps the lights on SideQuesting, because servers cost a lot of money, guys.
It's hard to keep lights on in internet buildings that aren't real.
It is, especially when there's like sex texting or whatever going on in the Golden Shower. Golden Shire?
I forgot to mention that's in World of Warcraft that occurs. I don't know if I said that.
I want to thank you guys for joining us. You can follow the website, www.sidequesting.com. You can follow us online on our Twitter account, @sidequesting. You can find me @coolrats. Where can we find you, young Ryan Franklin?
I am @thedarkwayne because I enjoy pretending to be Batman.
Where can we find you?
And giving away your secret identity.
Oh, shit!
Now the Joker knows where you're looking. How about you, Mike? What's your Twitter handle?
@TheMikeBachman.
Shit, do I have to be like @TheDallyDomofsky next? Or do I have to be like @TheCoolRats? I have to add the at the beginning of my...
That's actually, I think we might have talked about this before, but it's only because at Mike Bachman was taken by the professional walk-on actor Mike Bachman, who does extra roles on NBC sitcoms.
You know, he probably has a lot of followers that think it's you.
Hopefully.
All right, everybody, that is it for the show. Thank you very much. We thank you for listening to the episode of the Side Quest numbered 413. I said that so bizarrely, but who cares? Because I'm signing off. It's only quarter after 10 here in beautiful Michigan. It's 87 degrees outside. I'm gonna go streaking. What are you guys gonna do? You guys gonna go streaking too? Let's all go streaking to the quads.
Definitely not.
Quads. I'm down.
I'm gonna go get some hot cyber action going on in Goldshire.
I can't believe you never heard of this, Mike.
I've never heard of this, and now I have the next like week planned out. I'm gonna get some World of Warcraft dick.
I wonder if they have anything like that in Star Wars: The Old Republic. If they had golden showers in Star Wars: The Old Republic, they'd be able to keep it.
Star Wars Galaxies years and years ago, and that had a much different class-based system
of like, golden showers.
No, like you didn't start out and select your class like warrior. Like you did whatever you felt like, and one of the classes you could just be an entertainer. So there's just tons of people that chose like the sexy alien lady and were like space strippers and other players would pay them.
Mm-hmm. I think we need some space strippers to liven up this podcast even
further. Although that actually had a reason though, because like if they did their like the dance things, it gave you like a special buff that you kind of like needed to do the high level stuff.
The high level dances you can only get after practicing your low level dances in the Golden Shire. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you guys in the next side quest. We hope you've demoralized you enough this show. See you, everybody. Adios. Bye.
Bye.
Say bye, Ryan. It's custom.
Oh, bye.
corpses in a fever.